This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Welcome back to Kelly and Company. Do me a favor, around Canada, check us out from your TV. Listen in on Shaw Cable Channel 825 and Source Cable Channel 110. Visit ami.ca/audio for a list of channel locations in your area. Ramya Muthan, she's back from a few days off to the program. I'm Kelly McDonald.
And on Fridays, we love to have a little bit of an app conversation with our friends from the App Show. Let's bring on John Beeler.
This is the App Show, unlocking software secrets for smartphones, tablets, TVs, and more.
John, I'm completely in the dark with anything WWDC, so I'm super looking forward to your impressions on some of the announcements that were made, all the new product. But before we get to that, we must get to some serious business. Why we need to patch all our Apple devices? What's going on?
Yeah, there was a kind of a really bad exploit found in the pretty much all the Apple devices across all of the platforms. So MacBooks, iPhones, iPads, watches, everything. And they were actually discovered by University of Toronto researchers, and they're actually linked to the Pegasus spyware. This is the same stuff that the CIA uses to get into your phone.
Right. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, we hear about all this. I remember hearing about the organization that finds all that stuff. They search it out, but they also sell ways to do this and that to the countries. And it's pretty mega amazing when you see something like this corrupt, if you want to say, or interfere with what we're doing with our devices. So how do you go with how do you go about patching the device?
Well, despite the big Apple updates for hardware that are coming out, those are bringing with it iOS 15 and other things, but and they're going to be released next week. But Apple actually released the a very specific security patch for all those devices this past week, and you should basically go right now and don't do anything else on your device until you updated them to the latest versions. They should all be in your system settings. Just go to software update and there should be an update there if you haven't already applied it, or if it hasn't been applied automatically, if you have those turned on automatically.
Okay. Really good. Yeah. It gets pretty scary. So let's go with a Microsoft account, go passwordless. This is kind of interesting. Tell us about this, John.
Yeah, this is something that Microsoft's been working on for quite a while, and they've been really pushing it hard on the, Windows and just your general Microsoft accounts for a long time. And what this means is that you basically can choose to remove a password from your Microsoft account. So you can log into all your different Microsoft things without using a password. You do have to use basically a second form of authentication, and that's typically using the Microsoft Authenticator app. But basically what this means is that even if a hacker got your Microsoft account password, it would be useless to them because they can't log in without having this other thing. And if you remove the password altogether, well, then they're completely unable to do anything to your stuff. It's just a little unfortunate that you can only use the Microsoft Authenticator app. You can't use things like Google Authenticator, which uses a QR code format. Microsoft uses a QR code format to enable this passwordless access. So essentially you have to scan a code to get into it. Or you could also use a physical security token. Like there's a YubiKey, which is basically like a little USB thumb drive that you plug in. And it is like a physical key like you would use to start your car, for example, or open your front door. And that will also be usable as a means of authenticating yourself into the Microsoft account. So I actually kind of really like this because Microsoft, for whatever reason, over the years, I've got so many different email addresses that are associated with it. And I always seem to get the passwords wrong, which, you know, which one I'm logging into. So if I can get rid of this stuff and just use the app and just get right back in.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Do you think people will have problem with almost treating going back and treating like the physical key, if you want to call it, access, even though this is wonderful in the sense of not having to remember all the different things like that, your passwords? I wonder how long before people start there. Well, I lost it, or I'm not used to having it around, or maybe we still have enough keys around that it's okay.
Yeah, it's funny. I think this has been opt-in for a while now, and I think now that they've sort of enabled it across all levels of accounts, like I think Chromebooks and like classroom accounts were using this for quite a while, because I think classroom situations probably have this problem all the time. But I think the idea of just being able to use this app is a pretty good approach to it, to address the problem and sort of balance things. Cause even if you don't have your physical token key, you can still use the app, I think. So, that might be fine. What I'm curious though, is for folks like yourself, what about the accessibility of using these types of means of getting in versus just using a password?
Yeah, and honestly, I've been having thoughts and conversations about just QR codes in general. We've been exposed to more of it now because of the pandemic and, you know, menus and just contactless type things. So I am curious about it. But at this point, I don't know if there's a lot to think about with the accessibility. I haven't had enough exposure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think Microsoft's been pretty good at dealing with accessibility issues.
Sure.
That's my sort of anecdotal experience with it. And you guys would know better than I do, but they seem to have tried to at least be aware of all these things more so than other companies.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They're at the forefront with at least acknowledging accessibility things. So now let's talk about all the new Apple devices announced at the WWDC event this week. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with the iPhone. iPhone 13, that was the big rumor that it was going to be called that, and indeed it is. I actually didn't think they were going to call it the 13, but
wow,
here we are.
Apple's bold.
Yeah, exactly. Just to be a little blunt, it's not a huge update. On the App Show, Mike and I have we have a debate about whether, you know, do you need to update? And I think it really boils down to what is your use case. You know, everything got, you know, an incremental update. We've got a little bit better cameras. We got a little bit better battery life. We got a little bit performance. But if you already have like a 12 Pro or a 12, mm-hmm. you probably don't need to update. It just really depends on what's really important to you. The one thing that I will say is that the cameras did get a nice bump as far as the low light performance, and the low light modes work across all the lenses now, which is nice. If you're interested in photography and low light, the Pro models are also getting some really nice video updates. They can actually record in almost broadcast quality now, 4K. And they are all the devices are also getting these sort of adaptive refresh rates. So they can go up to 120 hertz. And so as you're scrolling through, say, a website, it can actually improve the refresh rate. And when you're just watching some static content, it can actually dial it down. And that will actually save your battery life quite a bit. So I think they've done some really interesting thing on the software side, less so about the hardware across the entire line of the 13. And we've got the 13 Pro, Pro Max, the 13, and the 13 Mini.
So do you think it's more of an upgrade for people who are, as you mentioned, if you have the 12, 12 Pro, all that, it's going to feel like a tiny upgrade, and especially if you got it a few months after the release, right? But for some of my friends who are still on the 6s and 7s, it would be a dramatic increase regardless, or upgrade, sorry.
Yeah, definitely if you're below a 10, this might be a good time to do that. Do you remember when they would always have, like, you know, the the 6, and then they have the 6S update. And the S update was always kind of like an intermediary update. Like it wasn't
pretty much
life-changing. Mm-hmm. This 13 feels like the 12S that way. And there's some debate about whether it even warrants that level of acknowledgement because it is such a incremental update. But yeah, I think it just really depends. I mean, no question, if you go from a 6 or a 7, this is going to be like going to the future. Like,
yeah, it's
going to be dramatic.
But then the question is, again, and this is just me tossing out, again, more broad ideas, then why would you just not upgrade to the 12, you know, from a 6 or a 7?
Well, you could, except for Apple has discontinued the 12. So the bus has left in that department. Yeah.
Well, okay, guess spend the money and get the 13.
That's the logistics of it. Well, and we were saying this the other day on the show that you get into where, you know, when it comes time to purchase another one, that, you know, some people will say, well, why do they bother with this little incremental changes, this here, you know, it's not worth buying from this model necessarily to the next one. But it almost seems timed enough that 2-year contracts come around and there's then a point of, hey, there's another reason to get the next one. There know people are going to sit there and say, it's not that much different than what I have now. Why should I? Or what, is some eager beaver going to always try every 10 months to get another one? No.
The thing I always tell people is if you can, go into a store and actually try one, especially if you have an older model. That alone typically will be enough to tip the scale. The other interesting thing that Apple did, though, this time around, at least in Canada, this is new to us in Canada, they've actually made it very easy for you to afford to do that upgrade. They've now offered 24 months, up to 24 months financing with no interest.
Ooh.
So you can basically make it a lot more easy to upgrade without having to change your plan and all that stuff. You just buy it outright from Apple and you finance it for probably less than you'd be paying going through a carrier and getting a carrier upgrade on a month-to-month basis.
Wow.
That really does make you think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's still not cheap. I mean, you just don't have any big upfront cost though. So.
Any more updates you want to highlight or announcements from WWDC?
Yeah, probably my favorite thing that was announced. And there was a bunch of things. I mean, we've got the iPad mini has been updated. We've got the regular iPad was updated and the Watch Series 7. The iPad mini, though, is probably the queen of the show as far as I'm concerned, because basically they've made the iPad Air mini. This is got the squared off edges. It's got the USB-C connector. It's got the fast chip. It's got support for the pencil, and it's the perfect form factor. It's my favorite form factor of the iPads. I'm kind of regretting buying an iPad Air last year because I was waiting for them to do an update to the mini. And at the time, the rumors were that the mini was going to be discontinued. So I bought an Air, but now they've basically made the iPad mini Air, and it's really great. It is a little pricey, though. It actually feels like a little bit more expensive than the last generation of the iPad, but you get a lot more for that money. So I think it starts at about $649 Canadian. So it's not inexpensive, but it also is basically like the perfect form factor for a lot of people.
Really great how they continue to kind of tweak and how would you even call it? Like, make some of the products feel like they're merging together. So then it feels like there's an extra option for people, right?
It's really like a responding to what someone like you, John, would almost say, hey, look, you know what? This would be really great. Or this is what I'd like.
Right.
Well, hey, this is what we've got for you. Whoa, what? There's a lot of that anticipation of what people will want and convenient ways to use it, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they pretty much have a price point for every $100 all the way up to the top. You know, so you can sort of pick and choose what features are important to you and sort of get a good sense of what it is. But I do appreciate that, you know, they come up with all these new whiz-bang features on the pro levels and they trickle down then to the other models the following year or the next update, basically. So, it just really depends. I mean, the nice thing about some of these devices that people have is they're still using them years later and they still work perfectly fine. Apple does have some pretty good trade-in options as well. So if you do want to look at something new, you can just punch in your serial number and it'll tell you what they're going to give you for it. So
John, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
John Beeler of The App Show here every Fridays for us.
Kelly and Company returns right after the break. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.